This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and with me, Kusu Chuang. You're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Today, we have P. Gunasekaram, an independent business analyst. Guna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, congrats on your new book entitled 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government. This is the first book to hit stores on this 1MDB story, beating the WSJ journals as well as Claire Brown to it. Yeah, so tell us, yeah. Guna, I mean, what spurred you to write the book?
Actually, I think we were the first ones. I mean, when I say we, I mean KiniBase, which was a news portal that I founded together with Malaysia Kini. And we were the first ones to actually write a lengthy investigative piece on 1MDB. This was way back in March 2013. So we felt that maybe we should come out and be the first to come out with the book as well. You know, so and it is an issue that we have been following for a long time. And therefore, part of the book was already in the making from the articles that have been written since 2013.
Yeah, Guna, but because the 1MDB has become such a global issue, the timing of your book has also come out around about the same time as Claire Rucastle-Brown's and the two individuals at the Wall Street Journal. One of them is just Tom Wright. I think it's coming tomorrow. Did you find that being, you know, launching a book in such a competitive landscape was a boon or a bane?
I think the book itself is not purely for commercial reasons. I think it was necessary to put out this entire issue in a manner which is understandable for a majority of people. It's a complex issue, no doubt, and I think what I've tried to do is to explain what 1MDB was all about. And how the pilferage of money from 1MDB took place, and what are some of the other issues which center around 1MDB itself.
Yeah, factually as well, it's very, very complex and very intricate. Of course, accuracy is very important. Mm. Even recently, some members of the public suggesting that 1MDB and the whole anti-corruption drive should be made a subject in school. I mean, who knows? One day your book and other books on this issue could become textbooks on the issue.
I doubt very much that it will become a textbook now, because I think, I think 1MDB is the culmination of a lot of corruption which has been building up in the country, you know, so that was part of it.
Well, Gunnar, it's interesting when in your book, right, you started off the book sharing your experiences working in The Star, and you shared that you were told to lay off and that 1MDB was out of bounds, this is in quotes, in terms of writing stories linked to 1MDB. How frustrating was that? And, you know, to be working in such a media company that, you know, that is in a way trying to bury the story?
I think you know, there is a lot of politics behind newspapers in Malaysia. Most of the newspapers are actually quite linked to political parties, which were the ruling parties at the point of time. So it's a reality that we had to work it. But I mention it because we could not do anything more at that point of time when we saw that there was a strange thing going on. When the bond seemed to be the first bond that 1MDB raised, when it was Terengganu Investment Authority, was very was priced very low, you know, at a yield which was very attractive for investors.
I see. Okay. Mm. Did you even try to pursue the 1MDB story even when you were told to, you know, stop pursuing that narrative, or could you share some instances on how The Star tried to shut down that 1MDB story at that time? Of course, now this new Malaysia, everyone's all after. This is before in 2013, you're saying?
I think basically we were told quite clearly that this story was out of bounds at that point of time. So it's no point not going ahead and producing it anyway.
I see.
Because it was going to get nixed. So when 4 years later, when I set up KiniBase together with Malaysia Kini, so we thought that that was a good starting point. You know, it'll be one of the issues that we should raise. You know, and so we went quite deeply into investigating that. You know, and the first indication of wrong things happening at 1MDB was this mispricing of that loan at that point of time. You know.
Yeah,
I'd like to get very honest with you now, Gunnar, because obviously this is pressing matters. It goes beyond the headlines. You're a journalist yourself. I want to ask you, as a journalist yourself, and because of the structural imbalances behind writing a book in this country, it is not commercially viable, by and large, for a journalist or a book author to be producing books in this day and age. I think the publishers and the various assorted ecosystem takes a large lion's share. From a journalist perspective, from an author's perspective, how should this new landscape alter so that more and more authors and more journalists are compelled to come out and write good stories like the one you just produced?
It's pretty difficult to say. You know, I think if you sell 5,000 books in Malaysia, you're supposed to be
a bestseller.
In most instances, you become a bestseller. But the thing is, it won't be correct to say that it's not commercially viable. You can have a commercially viable book which is selling 1,000 copies, you know, because you can price it such that you will make some amount of money. The publisher will make some amount of money, and the author will receive a royalty, you know, usually anywhere ranging between about 8 to 16%, depending. So, but it is not a terribly profitable business.
The value comes after, with endorsements, with speaking engagements, with consultancy, for example. It's the platform, right?
You don't necessarily get consultancies as a result. You don't usually get paid for speaking engagements. So,
because this question is particularly galling to me, because as a Malaysian, and I know you put a lot of work, especially during your Kinibiz years with Jose, producing, and your other reporters at the time, to me, when Tom Wright and his co-author produced The $1 billion Whale and it sold worldwide, and you know, from a commercial perspective, Tom and his co-author stand to gain a lot more money than we do, even though the whole event is a Malaysian event and it should be a Malaysian celebration commercially as well, right? So I don't know, maybe in this new digital age and this new whole era of Malaysia Baru, we can relook at the whole structure. For example, one indication of commercial success would have been a bootleg version of your book, but I only saw the bootleg version of the Tom Wright book. To me, that was a little bit of a incongruous but irritating situation.
But why would you want a bootleg version?
Correct. But that's a sign of its popularity. Yours wasn't. Yeah. So do you know what I mean, right? I was why isn't Gunnar's one also there? You know,
because I think Tom Wright's the bootleg version was a leak from initial copies that
was
distributed.
It was. Yeah.
For review purposes.
See, what I'm trying to say is, I want your book to be in the New York Times bestseller list. I want Gunnar to be an international best-selling author, right? Not just selling in Malaysia.
I think that would need international distribution. I think for me, the audience for me was first and foremost Malaysians. So I'm working with the publishers to see whether this book can be distributed internationally. Obviously, there need to be some kind of changes which need to be made. So that might take a little bit of time, but eventually, perhaps we might think about in terms of international distribution as well.
Yeah, I think the angling of the book as well. I mean, for Gunnar's book is very localized and that had that angle on the local factor, whereas the $1 billion Whale had the Hollywood.
It's the style.
It's different. Yeah, it's a different kind of writing as well. Yeah. I think in Gunnar's good book, I mean, it's an account from a journalist and his colleagues of the 1MDB scandal as it developed and that spun out of control. Gunnar, could you share with us the challenges when you were pursuing the big story? Because at The Edge, they were also one of the first to chase that story, and they were shut down. I mean, for you guys in your book, you shared that legal letter as well that you printed in the book. Yeah, could you share some challenges that you had to overcome while you were pursuing this?
I think the some of the things we could get from some of the investigations itself. Now, so I think one of the things which is not mentioned in the other books is this issue of loan mispricing, the bond mispricing, so which we latched on to because that was an early indication that things were not right. So when you pitch the yield, effectively the return on the bond at too high a level, that means you are underpricing the bond. And this bond is actually guaranteed by the Malaysian government. So there is a huge difference between, a government-guaranteed bond and what 1MDB's bonds were actually being pitched at. You know, and then subsequently, when you look at one of the first deals that we examined was the the Petro-Saudi deals, where the investment was never obtained back in cash. You know? So it's a situation where it continued to be rolled. And then when we look at the annual report, you can see that this kind of redemption takes place almost all the time at very close to the balance sheet date, you know? Or even on the balance sheet date in some instances. So we wrote this in March 2013. And if actually some action had been taken at that point of time, some of the other things which happened could have been forestalled, you know, even at that stage now.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking to P. Gunasekaram, an independent business analyst. And after this, we'll talk more about Guna's new book entitled 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government. Stay tuned in the Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters. And our guest today is P. Gunasekaram, independent business analyst and founding editor of Kinibiz. With me is Kusu Chuang. And today we're talking about Guna's new book entitled 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government. And Guna, in your book, you shared that you've met Jolo and you spoke to him off the record in KL. And, you know, he's known among business journal circles to be friendly and approachable. So do you think he could have gone that far if he didn't have the backing from, you know, people of power?
Jolo is a very personable guy. No? You know, I mean, you could almost say that he is very likable as a person. No? And, I mean, he was very non-committal about the questions that we had to ask. And he basically denied and subsequently issued a statement to the effect that he had very little to do with 1MDB, apart from an advisory role when it was TIA. Certainly he couldn't have done what he did without connections at the highest places, in this case, the former prime minister. No?
Well, we've got a WhatsApp question from Niam. Niam asks, you know, Guna, was Najib misled by Jolo? Najib being here, the former prime minister.
That's a pretty difficult conclusion to come to. No, for instance, let's look at the first auditors, KPMG. They refused to sign off. You know, a long time ago, they refused to sign off the accounts. You know? So the auditors are appointed actually by the shareholders, and there is only one shareholder in this case, which is Minister of Finance Incorporated. Now. So to my mind, I mean, even at that point of time, definitely the auditors would have had to have briefed someone in MOF Inc., you know, about this. And then you had Ernst & Young refused to sign off first, and then KPMG, and then you had Deloitte, and so on. You know, and then on top of that, there were the early resignations of Mohamed Baqir Saleh, who is known to be quite close to Najib. And he, you know, one would think that he would have told Najib about what his reservations were, you know? So if and then on top of that, there is a section 117C under the Memorandum and Articles of Association of 1MDB, which clearly stated that all major things which might affect 1MDB's credit rating will have to be signed off by the Minister of Finance. You know, so there is no way that he could not have known what was going on. You know? And then writing about 1MDB has been taking place from 2013, starting with us. And then by 2015, there were so many other questions which had been raised through email leaks and so on. So how could he not have known that irregularities were taking place?
Well, anyway, congratulations, Guna. It is, you know, vintage, your first book as well. Now that the story, I guess, has come to a culmination because 1MDB is no longer what it used to be, what's next for you? Has this book whetted your appetite for more books?
More stories?
More stories?
To uncover stories?
What's the next thing? What's the next story?
I haven't really thought about it. I mean, the book has taken a fair amount of time. It helped that we wrote a lot of the articles. I would say, you know, I mean, the actual writing and things like that took a few months, but it helped a lot that we had actually done a lot of work on 1MDB earlier. You know? So without that, we could not have written it in the few months that it was written. You know?
What's the next story on this then? Is there a next story?
Good question.
Right? Mm. There's many. Malaysia is, I think, it's a Hollywood scriptwriter's dream.
I think 1MDB is an ongoing story. The story is not over yet. So perhaps once things settle down and you know what is the ending like, then perhaps there might be a revised edition, perhaps, you know, to take into account all of these things. But remember, the point that the book makes is also that, you know, this change could not have come a moment to sooner, because there were already things in the pipeline where contracts were being overpriced to fill the hole in 1MDB. You know? So that's also, we have put in a chapter on that. This is over, you know, the ECRL as well as the pipeline projects, which are overpriced by around $30
billion. Yeah.
And the money was paid into foreign accounts. You know?
Yeah. Mm. So, okay. So in your mind, Gunnar, who is the bigger culprit here? Is it Joe Lau or is it Najib?
I think the two biggest, the people who were the most culpable were Najib and Joe Lau. You know, so
who's the bigger culprit? Can anyone put a finger on it?
The bigger culprit? I think you would be jointly culpable. You know? I think the evidence is looks like both of them jointly stole the money. You know, and the mastermind in this case, the mechanics of it probably was done by Joe Lau himself. You know.
Well, Gunnar, I know recently there have been news reports, and Joe Lau has come out to say that, you know, the book, the Billion Dollar Whale book, that's based on hearsay, gossip. He's even gotten legal firms to stop the book from selling in the UK. What are your thoughts on that? Like, he's still going on and he's denying it. I mean, our former PM as well, gone on Facebook, you know, to deny some claims. So what are your thoughts on this after working on the story for years?
Yeah, you see, he has got no choice but to deny all of this. Mm-hmm. But I think the most authoritative public document on this so far is the U.S. Department of Justice filings, two of them. So those had clearly identified $4.5 billion U.S. was stolen from 1MDB. They used the term stolen, you know. And they state there unambiguously, with all the benefit of banking records, that they went to accounts which were controlled by Joe Lau, and they state that, you know. So, these are all electronic transfers and things like that. And I don't think when it comes right down to it, you're going to be able to argue about these things.
Yeah, because you can see the cash flow, the money flow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there are the emails which actually indicate very clearly the email leaks, you know, both through Sarawak Report as well as The Age, that Joe Lau was actually pulling the strings, you know, behind the scenes at 1MDB, you know, for some reason. You know, 1MDB was actually being directed by Joe Lau himself, you know.
Mm. Well, you shared in your book that, you know, in your first article of the series questioning whether 1MDB giant Ponzi scheme or strategic investment fund, you received a lawyer's letter from the 1MDB lawyers, that's Wong and Partners. Mm-hmm. After that, it kind of died down and then you all still continued pursuing it. You all weren't sure at that time. You know, do you think that that is a way to, you know, for them to send you a lawyer's letter? Do you think that's a strategy?
I think they were trying to intimidate us to not report. But on our side, we actually tried to get in touch with 1MDB officials, and they did not. So when they sent us the lawyer's letter, we said, look, no, we tried to talk to you guys, but you did not. Mm. But even so, we are prepared to publish in full whatever you have to say, reserving the right of reply, of course, you know. And we also, our lawyers pointed out to them that 1MDB, being a government corporation, cannot actually sue somebody else. You know, so those are the things. And then we were quite sure of the facts, and the rest of it was basically conclusions that we draw from the facts, you know, which will be considered fair comment under the law. So we decided to go ahead and publish anyway. You know?
Do you have any fear at all of recrimination, any legal actions, or has that ever impeded your, you know, your journalistic compass?
I think basically I've always gone by two things when it comes to these things. And one is whether what you ascertain as true is true, you know, which means the fact has to be correct. And then the other thing is whether the conclusions that you draw from the facts are fair, you know. So if these two things are covered, then you are usually all right as far as the legal side is concerned.
So what do you make of assertions by the former prime minister as well as Joe Lau that they maintain their innocence? Is it because they got no choice?
I think they have got no choice but to maintain their innocence, you know, because, I mean, definitely the former prime minister is facing court action. He has to maintain his innocence.
Well, he's claimed trial, but if you plead guilty, then you get a reduced sentence, right?
Perhaps, I mean, that may come up at a later stage during the trial. So you never know what exactly is going to happen as far as that is concerned. But it's my opinion that they have very little ground for defense.
Or maybe just they just internally really believe that they're innocent. Well, we've been speaking to P. Gunasekaram, an independent business analyst and founding editor of Kinibus. Thank you, Gunnar, for being on our show today. And if you'd like to get Gunnar's book entitled 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government, the book retails at 60 ringgit in bookstores nationwide. I'm Joyce Goh, and with me, Kusu Truong, signing off for the Morning Run this morning. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this. This is BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.